piece of meat?
Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
You do! You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
I am serious. And don't call me Shook.
There's no crying in baseball!
This is wrong, bitch.
May the Schwartz be with you.
I am your father.
Get you, my pretty.
Take your stinking paws off me.
May the force be with you.
Here's Johnny.
What up, film fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome to a bonus episode of the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Juan, and I am joined by the cast, the crew, the family. Franco?
What up?
Andy?
How you doing?
Jake?
What's going on, guys?
How you guys doing? Good week? Busy week for a lot of you guys.
It's all right.
Busy week.
Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for having and sitting on this podcast with me. That just shows you the kind of character that we're about to dig into and talk about. If you guys haven't listened to an episode yet or watched an episode live here on Amos Watt Productions YouTube channel, man, this is our first ever documentary that we're going to get into. And we're talking about the Peacock original Bray Wyatt Becoming Immortal documentary, which is available now. So if you have not checked it out, go check it out. Other than that, you guys can find us, any of our show links, on the social media, Facebook page, facebook.com/thecinnamonmoviepodcast. The Instagram is all one word, /thecinnamonmoviepodcast. X is @cinnamon405. And then the email, cinemen921@gmail.com. But let's kind of dig into our episode. If you guys have not joined us yet for a bonus episode, it's been like over a year that we've done them. We kind of just get straight into the subject matter. We'll hang out, talk about it for a little bit, and then see what's on the schedule for the future. So other than that, we can get ready to dig into it.
I just sent you a message there, Juan.
Oh, okay. Is he getting on?
He's probably, yeah, he sent it to me earlier. I just now got it.
Okay, okay. Before we dig into it then, Franco, you have any news or notes that you want to go over?
No, I'm just ready to dive into this. Bray Wyatt was became one of my favorite characters and everything.
Let's talk about that before we get on while I send this email. Little technical difficulties. Jay, we'll kind of do it like we do on the regular episode. Do you remember the first time that you got to watch this, and what was it like in just a few short words after the documentary? And then what was it like rewatching it for the documentary or for the podcast?
I seen it the first day it came out, which was April 1st. You know, I seen it that afternoon that it came out, and the wrestling industry always says the wrestling newsletter and all that stuff, they don't know what they're talking about, but the stories that I read on the column, you know, they sounded pretty much close to what was saying in the documentary. So, you know, they did sugarcoat some things, but if you know the truth, you know the truth.
Franco, what about you? What was it like watching it for the first time in a few short words?
I watched it the same day. The day it came out, the afternoon. Didn't wait for my wife to come home to watch it. teared up quite a few times in it. I think like the last hour of it was very emotional. And I watched it immediately a second time once my wife got home that day and teared up some more.
Man.
I think it was very well put together.
Andy?
Yeah, I didn't jump immediately at it because I don't know. I just wanted to have complete time to myself to watch it, to absorb it, no distractions. And that was very much worth it. Very, very strong, very emotional. You don't think you're going to cry at a documentary. I did not, but I'm just saying.
we can use like a line that Paul Heyman used back in the day. Like, I wasn't crying, I was just getting high, right? that's where those tears were coming from.
That's all my that's it.
No, I think it wasn't it was an extremely emotional documentary. And you know, talking about movies all the time, I've seen so many documentaries, I'm sure we all have. But a documentary like this, I feel, do you guys think maybe it was like a little too soon? Or do you think it was just perfect timing? Like, I feel, it was good, don't get me wrong, it was very good, but it was just a little too depressing at sometimes for me, at certain parts of the documentary.
Well, how do you expect the documentary on a guy that passed away to go?
give me a little time to breathe, man. I can still hear the ring bell from his salute. You know, I don't know. There's so many things out there that's just like touchy and stuff like that. But I agree with all you guys. Like, it was a very, very, very well put together documentary, especially talking about like his early days. What do you guys think? Did you think there was enough early days like footage of him being like a kid and seeing little baby Bray?
Oh yeah, there was plenty of that stuff. It was very informative as his Bray Wyatt character became Bray Wyatt, you know, Husky Harris, you know, whenever he was, what was it, Duke Rotunda or something like that? Duke
Rotundo.
Oh, when he was like an FCW.
Yeah, him and his brother were tag team champions and stuff. Yeah, I have it written down. Bo and Duke Rotunda.
Seeing him dress up as the Ghostbusters and the Beetlejuice, you got to hear from his mother how into the horror he actually was, how intuitive and how out there his mind actually was as a child. And he was ready. That's another thing about, we didn't see a lot of his youth, early days in wrestling, because he was already out there. He was ready for the big times. He had ideas and he put them out there, and that's very clear.
I understood why he hated the Husky Harris character, but that was like the character I actually enjoyed a lot of in NXT whenever it first happened. His one of my favorite lines of his is the army tank with Ferrari engine. But I understand why he hated it, but that's what made me originally like him.
I didn't have a problem with the Husky Harris gimmick either. I thought it was okay. No one that got him a world title, but I thought it was an okay gimmick.
Yeah, it was definitely a good like first starter.
Fair. Fair.
Well, they make it sound like it was such a disappointing gimmick, and I'm like, no, that got you your foot in the door, man.
Mm-hmm. I guess from a fan standpoint, you view it one way, like Cody Rhodes and Stardust. He hated the Stardust gimmick. I enjoyed the Stardust gimmick. I can understand why Bray and his family did not like the Husky Harris gimmick, because it was only pointing at him being a big guy. Yeah. But when you use your character to its fullest, which Husky Harris was, he did the job. I appreciated that character. I appreciate that time, but I understood he wanted more.
It seems fitting that he was paired with someone that was frustrated with their gimmick at the time as well. You know, who was paired with Cody Rhodes, you know, somebody that was frustrated with his gimmick of Stardust. So two people that know frustration very well with the gimmick.
Yeah. And then you also have like some of the talks with getting just to know the background of his family, Barry Windham, his dad, and especially a lot of stuff that a lot of people didn't know about his brother. What, Bo was like 3 years after, then his sister was 6 years after.
Yeah.
So, another guest. What up, Sam?
What up?
Joined by Sam Stackhouse. Thanks for joining us, hanging out with us, talking a little Bray Wyatt. We just got done asking everybody what, you know, in a few short words, what was their emotion like after the documentary? How did you feel like a little bit after the documentary? Like,
I mean, it was pretty hard on the emotions. It got me. I've watched it twice so far. That second time was in an Airbnb with a bunch of other wrestlers, and I think every single one of us was crying, so, or at least teared up. So,
it was definitely real emotion. We just got done talking about the Husky Harris character, how so far everybody on this episode has enjoyed the upbringing of Bray Wyatt, but how he didn't really enjoy his character as Husky Harris. How did you feel about his first televised gimmick on TV?
I mean, probably the same as everybody else. I thought it was weird. I mean, it's clearly a fat joke, you know. But I mean, I've been a fan of him since then. I mean, I'm obviously a fan of the athletic big boys, so I liked him when I first saw him. I wasn't a fan of the name, obviously. I didn't understand really what the gimmick was supposed to be, but I liked him from the beginning, so I'll give him that.
I would feel kind of the same way, like especially having a little more areas to hug on and love. Like Bray Wyatt automatically for me was like, dude, like he had the look, he had the feel, he had the gimmick, he had the charisma. Especially I enjoyed them going through and him talking about Cabin. I just got into watching that movie too. The Robert De Niro movie where he got some of his
Cape Fear.
There you go, Cape Fear. Man, I just
Another big influence on him was Waylon Mercy, an old wrestler from the mid '90s. And when I first seen his gimmick when he became Bray Wyatt, I was like, "Holy shit, he's Waylon Mercy."
Yeah, I know who that was until I saw the clip, but when I saw the documentary, I can definitely see where he got his thing from. I can definitely see it.
What about you, Franco? A little after he digs into the early Bray Wyatt character, what else? What's another thing that just kind of like you just grasped onto him about? Just Husky Harris went away for a little bit, and then boom, NXT happened, and it's all just the promos from there, the short stories, the everything.
Yeah, I didn't watch NXT back in the day. I think it was whenever we started hearing buzzes about this new character and everything coming up. I went back and looked back on what it was, and I fell in love instantly. Like, Bray Wyatt is just amazing. The promos they did were great on him. The whole, I think it was a family, or Harper at the time. It was just amazing.
Jay, what about you? Do you remember, like, the first time kind of getting your eyes on Bray? I think the first time I seen him, they paired him in, like, automatically with the rivalry with Kane, like, right around that SummerSlam time.
Well, I remember watching some of his NXT stuff, so I got to see the beginning whenever they were starting the whole family up and everything. But that was about it. It was a cool thing to see.
I wish I got to see that NXT stuff like as it was going on. I did not get to see any of that stuff going on. What about you, Andy? You remember anything that really caught your eye, or was it like a little bit later for you with Bray? Or
I'm always blurry on wrestling stuff because I've watched a lot of it and I'm out of it now. But the family was very interesting to me. It was a swamp gimmick, and his voice captured the whole package was carried with the way he spoke and his mannerisms. I was instantly a fan, especially with the Wyatt family versus the Shield. I was extremely hyped. I don't think I followed from the beginning, especially not NXT, but when I did finally catch a glimpse at him and the whole family, I was all for it.
Yeah, it was definitely something cool to see. What about you, Sam? You said you witnessed all the way back to like the beginning of some of his stuff, like FCW. Do you kind of wish, or anybody can really answer, but Sam, do you kind of wish he had a little bit more time in NXT before going straight to the main roster, like a few months after? There's so many different like rivalries and stories I think he could have done in NXT before getting to the main roster, maybe.
Well, I mean, like looking back at how much time we got with him, I wish they would have brought him up sooner. But and if I knew what was going to happen, but I mean, I definitely could have seen him staying down there and having more feuds, but. I think they probably brought him up the same at the right time. So he was ready, and he showed up, and his promos blew everybody out of the water. So you know he was probably ready. There wasn't much sense in him sitting down there wasting all those good promos and not on TV. I'm sure they probably thought the same thing. Plus, him coming up got homie brought up too for a little while and everything. So I think it worked out good.
Well, they sat there and said in the documentary that the character wasn't a regular wrestling gimmick; it was a movie character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, and that needed to be on TV. Not just in promo class, you know.
I find it funny in the documentary, they were talking about like how certain guys would get like, what, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and then here Bray Wyatt is doing like 15, 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, because he couldn't, like, there's not much he could do in that amount of time anyways. He tells stories, or he told stories with his promos, you know. You can't do that in 30 seconds. You need more time. And he had so many stories in his mind so creative, he probably could have went for 30, 45 minutes just talking, probably.
Rambling around.
Build a whole world for you right out of his brain. He probably could have. It's crazy.
Well, he did eventually build a whole world for us to celebrate the Firefly Funhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, so he definitely could have done that with his words back in NXT, so that's probably why Dusty let him keep talking for so long.
What'd you guys think of him coming in and, you know, automatically going towards, like, the SummerSlam match with Kane? Then I think they'd start doing, like, some six-man tag matches getting started and just really probably getting a feel for everybody on how the main roster works and stuff. He had, like, an Inferno match, but they didn't call it an Inferno match, right? They called it something else.
I don't recall the Inferno match.
Yeah, I think that was his first match with Kane at SummerSlam. I think it was like something like, hell match.
Like I kind of remember it because I thought it was a little hokey at the time, but like I don't remember like hating it or anything, so that's probably good.
And I think that's just the most frustrating thing about watching this documentary.
It was a Ring of Fire match.
There you go.
Is it Johnny Cash?
I think that's what probably is most upsetting when you sit back and watch this documentary and just knowing how much time and effort went into this character and this just this person in general, and then the release, and like, man, like, you imagine all the stuff he could have been doing after the release, like, and then they had the scenes where he was like supposedly hard to work with, and it's just like we miss so much time of him being right where he is in his prime that. I know for me, I wasn't frustrated with the way the documentary was put together, but I was just frustrated in general as far as, like, you know, we missed a lot of time that we could have had.
We did miss a lot of time, but he himself seems to have been having fun with his family. And we can be resentful and angry about what we could have had, but I kind of want to see those monster hunting videos he was doing with his brother. Yep. That'd be exciting to see someday, have that come out.
Yeah. And just to show, like, what do you guys think? Peacock and WWE put this documentary together, and it's just like, what else can we get from these guys as far as documentaries goes? They've hit it on the nail, like with the Cody Rhodes documentary, Bray Wyatt now. It's just like they're on a hot streak when it comes to everything, including documentaries, too. It's pretty fun.
They can do all kinds of stuff because, I mean, they're obviously good at telling stories, and there's a lot of stories in WWE. They can do all kinds of stuff. Like, it'd be cool if they did one on Big E. Like, because I guarantee they recorded his whole process when he went through all the surgery and all the stuff. I guarantee there was cameras there.
I can agree with that.
So yeah. That'd be pretty cool, you know. Maybe after like an Orton one, obviously. There's a lot. They could make a two-hour Orton documentary, probably.
Man, especially if they followed him.
Yeah.
But they have the CM. There's a CM Punk one now, but that was from like WWE home video from back in the day. That one isn't too bad.
Well, WWE has always been good at making documentaries about their characters. You know.
Yeah, they just quit doing it. Once they quit doing the DVDs, they quit doing it for a long time. And I wish they'd do it because honestly, when I would buy those DVDs, I rarely watched the matches. I'd watch the disc one with all the behind the scenes stuff and the documentary and stuff, and I'd be about done. Then it just sat on the shelf.
I would stay away from the second and third disc because that's all the matches. Yeah. The first disc is the only one.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of miss those documentaries on people, so I wish they'd do more of those. If they could, I mean, they did just a couple or two or three a year or something like that.
I would like to see one on the Miz. The Miz, they never
really on him. All the people that have been there forever, they got plenty of people they could do them on.
I think one of the best ones that WWE produced was the WrestleMania behind the scenes story. You know, that just seeing clips of that I've never seen before.
Because imagine how much footage. they're probably sitting on freaking just so many, just I don't know what the what's is there anything after terabytes, or is that like the highest one? I don't fucking know. But they're probably sitting on so much footage, and like that people will probably never see, that they can make all kinds of stuff out of.
Y'all were talking about how y'all wanted to skip the matches in these documentaries. I thought it was the only one. My favorite one was the Paul Heyman one, where he doesn't even wrestle.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite documentaries.
Oh yeah, I rarely watch the matches on those DVDs. I always just watch the part where they were telling the story, and then I'd be done with it.
That's the thing about wrestling, is that it's more than just wrestling. It's storytelling, and you get invested into these characters and the people that portray them. You know, it's so much more impactful than just wrestling. Yeah.
I mean, I was even into Total Divas when it was on, because it was cool. That was cool just to see all the at home stuff and all that was dope. I wish they would do more stuff like that.
I admit it was a guilty pleasure of mine. So was the Bella Twins show.
Yeah. See, I never watched the Bella Twins, but I watched Total Divas, and I enjoyed it.
They have a new one out right now with who is it? Bianca Belair.
Yeah, Montez and Bianca.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Oh, shoot. Look it up. I didn't even know that. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Even the stuff that they did that was like 30, 45 minutes with like 24/7 or the day of.
Yeah, those were super cool.
Yeah, or they had they would do like WrestleMania behind the scenes for a few days. I think that was 24/7.
Yeah.
Well, they just released a new documentary with The Rock and Roman Reigns explaining the whole ordeal on how it went from The Rock being in the main event with Roman Reigns to Cody Rhodes. That was released on YouTube on yesterday.
They haven't released it. They had some difficulties with it.
I watched the Roman Reigns A&E thing or whatever, that biography thing. It was pretty cool.
That was pretty good.
It had me wanting him to keep the belt forever.
Going back to like Bray Wyatt, just the person himself, like after you guys get to watch him going through his like early struggles and him kind of like he hit that ceiling after he had the feud with The Undertaker, which, man, I think we can all agree that was probably a lot better than the year before. He kind of hit like a bump in the road. He had the stuff with Matt Hardy, and then there was some points where he wasn't even being on TV. What did you guys think of the stuff he did with Matt Hardy? I think they won like the Raw Tag Team belts. He helped Matt Hardy win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, stuff like that.
I was kind of upset that they didn't talk about that on the documentary.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that.
They skipped a whole lot of story.
And then they didn't talk about like they didn't give much time into him with Randy Orton and the Wyatt family either.
Yeah, I didn't. Damn, that's
but I mean, it was really 2 hours as well. But still,
the story about
the stuff with Daniel Bryan too. They didn't put any of that in there either.
Oh yeah, that's right, Daniel Bryan.
Well, the storyline reason for Matt and him feuding was that he went into the Lake of Reincarnation and came out of Bray. Yeah. The Fiend character was born out of the Lake of Reincarnation, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I remember at the time none of that bothered me, but looking back, I can see it was just them trying to find something for him to do so that he wasn't just not on TV for a while, him and Matt both, but... At the time, it didn't bother me.
And then they ended up having the compound match, right? So, and I mean, I love documentaries. So, like, when this was 2 hours, I was like, oh man, that's a plenty of time to snag some stuff in and fit some detailed stuff in. But I think that's my only gripe. And I mean, it was a great documentary, but I really do think this thing could have went like 2:45 or almost 3 hours. And I think I would have enjoyed every single minute of a 3 hour. Documentary.
I think they spent too much time on the NXT stuff, honestly. I think they could have powered through a little bit more of that, and then they could have fit some of that stuff with like Orton and Daniel Bryan, all that stuff in there.
I think they could have done like parts as well.
It could have been like a two part. Yeah, that could have been perfectly fine too.
Because there's a lot of other, like, I would have liked to have them maybe dig into also that six man tag with the Shield.
Yeah.
Like maybe some before and after of like, because out of all those pay-per-views they were having back in those days, those were some, honestly, some of them were pretty bad. And I know that Elimination Chamber itself was, that's the only highlight I remember, is that six-man tag. Yeah. I don't know. That's just me though. You guys, I like that idea though, Frank, of a, like a four or five piece documentary series. Yeah,
that would have been way cool.
Well, they could have done it like they'd done the Undertaker's Last Ride, where it was like, what, 4 or 5 episodes, and they were about an hour apiece.
They definitely could have done it. Because like I said, you know, they got hella footage and like unseen promos and stuff, and no telling what kinds of crazy stuff he said or ideas he had and stuff like that. Ain't no telling.
And I mean, a lot of documentaries are like super, super detailed as far as like their personal lives. Are you guys kind of surprised they didn't go too into detail as far as his personal stuff goes, whether it be like the divorce or maybe some of the stuff he was going through in 2019 before the pandemic and right before the Fiend stuff happened? And then they didn't even really dig into details as far as that Hell in a Cell goes that he had with Seth Rollins. It's almost like they didn't even want to look that direction. I know a lot of people just had so much issues with that.
I mean, I can definitely see why they glossed over the whole divorce thing and all that. That definitely wasn't going to paint him in a very good light at that time. So
because what the story going around that he was cheating with JoJo?
Oh, he did. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because they made it seem like they were just friends, and then he got divorced, and then they got together. But they were definitely together before he got divorced. Yeah. So like. That I can definitely see why they skipped over that part, because it doesn't really matter because, you know, I mean, they married and have kids and stuff now, so it's not like it was just like a little fling or something. It was a real thing, so like it wasn't, you know. Plus, it's obviously they don't want to bring that up because his kids and stuff are going to be watching this and all. Yeah, so I mean, I see why they skipped over that. I probably would have made the same choice if I, because I'm sure his family and stuff had say in what went on in the documentary and what didn't too.
It would have been okay if they did talk about it a little bit, how hurtful it was, because we got to understand that these people, sure, we look up to them, but they can make mistakes too. They can do some bad as well.
And if it was like a documentary, just like if he was still alive and they were making a documentary around him, they probably would have. But like I said, since this is about his death, they probably didn't want to paint him in too bad of a light at any part of it. You know, they wanted to keep the good stuff.
Keep the conversation light.
Yeah. Because it's already sad enough. So you don't want to be like, well, damn, maybe I'm not as sad because he kind of was an asshole for a second. You know, they didn't want people. So I can see why they skipped over. Like, but if it was like one of those documentaries back in the day where it's like just this DVD they make and they're just putting it out, just a little update thing or whatever, I could see him getting in, because then he could be like, yeah, man, I messed, you know, do the whole defend himself thing. But he ain't here to do that. So I can see why they left him out.
They could have, at least they didn't do the destruction of Bray Wyatt.
For sure. And at least they didn't like not acknowledge it at all. I mean, they acknowledged it, so they just didn't go into details.
I knew someone was going to do
it. I assume they just assumed that people who knew already knew and could just fill in the blanks, you know?
Let your imagination go for the...
Yeah, yeah.
What about the Seth Rollins feud and Hell in a Cell match? Are you guys kind of, because I feel like that was the start of not only him creating his way out the door, but maybe a start of him being kind of difficult to work with, because let's face it, the man was given shit a lot of the times and he turned it into gold, but a lot of people just hated that match for some reason.
It's one of the only Hell in a Cells to end on a referee stoppage. Like, what the hell is that? A Hell in a Cell is supposed to be no rules, you know.
Yeah.
Do you guys...
A straight brawl.
I thought this was an interesting question. I kind of thought about this the second time I was watching it. Do you guys think maybe a lot of the reason why he had, like, creative frustration was because it was all, like, mostly Vince McMahon trying to steer the ship? And I think Vince McMahon was so, like, just... headstrong about making sure that anything he does can be good, but we don't want it to make it as great as the myth and the mystique of the Undertaker. Do you guys think he was trying to like just keep that away from everybody's eyes?
My whole opinion on Bray Wyatt since the beginning is let this guy take the ball and fucking run with it, do whatever the hell he wants, because all of his ideas were gold. And Vince is probably the one that steered away from all that shit.
Well, I agree with that completely. Like, you could tell he was pigeonholed.
I can see that point, but also like creative people like that are very notoriously hard to deal with. No, so because I guarantee you all of his ideas weren't good. Again, there's no way that all of his ideas were good. I guarantee you Triple H or Vince, whoever it was, talked him out of doing some stuff that would not have made any sense to regular people. Because the way he thought, because like his mind, like the way from, I mean, obviously I know the man, but the vibe I got, like his brain worked differently. So he was always like, he was always thinking and always trying to change things and stuff like that. And that's not how TV wrestling works. So somebody had to ring him in. And also, I don't think that Vince is going to put over, or like, if he thought that homie had something that would make money, he would have definitely let him put it on TV. I don't think Vince is nearly as petty with his money as people make it out to be. If he can make money off somebody, he's gonna give him a push. He's gonna do what they want. But like I said, I think he probably needed some of it to calm him down. But I'm sure there were some ideas that they probably could have let him roll with that probably would have made stuff better, and probably made like probably try to put some of their shit in there that might have not been as good, you know? Because no. there's no way. But like I said, I'm sure they needed to ring him in, but they definitely probably could have let him cook a little bit more.
Well, the one, whoever's idea it was, making the arena red, bad choice. Oh, I don't care.
Hated it. Yeah, that was so dumb. It made me so mad.
They didn't talk about that either. What the hell was going
on. No, of course I'm not going to talk about that. the bad, right? And I'll keep that out.
Yeah.
Probably was his idea.
If it was his idea, it was still bad.
Because it was so hard to watch, especially on TV.
Yeah.
And then they kind of
have a red cage, and then have a red lighting, and he's covered red.
And he's red, yeah.
They kind of did the same thing too when he came back. They were teasing the pitch black match, and I'm like, really?
I don't even want to talk about that. I was there at Royal Rumble, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. On account of I couldn't see shit. All you could see was the big old red mountain, or the big old Mountain Dew logo, and the ring ropes. That's literally all you could see. And then, like, when homie had his makeup that glowed in the dark, you could kind of see that, but then that was it. Like, in the arena, you couldn't see none of the stuff when they went flying off of the stage or whatever. You couldn't see none of that stuff. You couldn't see hardly anything. And it was, I was so mad. I was so mad.
I was there live too.
I'm still mad about it. Ugh. How'd you see it? I don't know how you could.
I was able to see it, and then I was like right there where Uncle Howdy jumped off of as well.
I was on the way other side, so I guess maybe if I was closer, it would have been better. But I couldn't. It was unwatchable to me.
I liked it.
I never got to see Bray live.
Well, that's the only time I think that's the only time. But I was. It wasn't my thing. It wasn't for me.
I think that's also another thing of maybe them just giving too much attention to sponsors.
Oh yeah, I hate it. Like I hate the Prime thing in the middle. Dude, I hate all of it.
I think if it wasn't for the whole Mountain Dew pitch black, I think him and LA Knight could have had a really entertaining match.
Have y'all tried that drink? It sucks.
Which one?
Pitch black.
Nah.
I had the zero. To me, all the Mountain Dews taste sweet. Even the zeros, they all kind of taste the same.
What about the Baja Blast?
I love only Baja Blast.
It's only good at Taco Bell.
I will mess up some Baja Blast.
I'm a big Mountain Dew fan. Just the regular Mountain Dew original.
See, I'm not a big regular. I don't drink the regular one hardly anymore. But if I see it, I had a Code Red randomly for the first time in like years the other day. It just jumped out at me, and I said, all right.
That was a sponsor for the All Red Everything match.
Oh, I can't stand that woman either.
She not making a comeback?
I hope not. That'll set the women's revolution back 100 years.
Well, he did team up with Jason Baker of the Calum Studios. It was a collaborator and creator of the Fiend costume.
Yeah. Is that the dude that's in the documentary? I never knew his name.
Yes, his name is Jason Baker.
Yeah.
Isn't he he's also the guy that started doing like the Blundering Brothers stuff, right? The masks.
Yeah,
and
he did all that. He created all that stuff.
That kind of got Bray going to me, like, hey, put me in something like that.
Yeah.
That got creative juices flowing, you know, being able to collaborate with a guy that can make costumes, you know. Right. And that was where Bray's mind was at, was creating a character that was in deeply dark and sadistic. And the Fiend was that.
What'd you guys think of like how they presented his documentary once, you know, you get into him being on the main roster? After a certain amount, they just kind of touched on him and WrestleManias. I thought that was a little that was cool and all, but like he didn't have the best of what's that?
What where he lost at every WrestleMania?
Yeah, like they just went Mania by Mania, so they kind of just you know
gloss over.
Yeah, it was,
well, at least they glossed over the friggin' 8 second match or whatever pretty quick, which was good because that was embarrassing.
Oh, with The Rock.
Yeah, they just kind of showed a little flash of that one and went on to the next one.
I think that's the only time I've ever got to see Bray Wyatt live, and that's kind of sad.
I don't think that even counts.
Yeah, not really.
Hey, I got to see the Fireflies.
That's good.
That's fair. Let's talk about his WrestleMania experience then. For really, it's kind of just a letdown, whether it be creative or whether it be like just something like his last. Let's look at his last one, 37. He had the one with Orton. You had the red light, and then it would have been kind of interesting to see where they were going to go with the Alexa Bliss kit thing as she popped out of the jukebox or the Jack in the Box. What do you guys think of that match?
I thought it was pretty decent for what it was. It was short, but I think Bray should have won. I don't think Alexa should have turned on him. It was too soon.
I think Bray should have won a lot more. Honestly, think about every match.
I honestly think he should have won against The Undertaker. If anybody should have been over by The Undertaker.
Even The Undertaker said that. Like I saw a thing that The Undertaker said that. Because he said between him, Lesnar and Reigns, it made more sense for it to be him, which is 100% true.
He only had five WrestleMania matches?
Yeah, he didn't have very many, and I think he didn't.
The only match he won was a cinematic match.
Oh, against John Cena, yeah.
He wrestled Randy Orton twice and John Cena twice?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's crazy.
And Undertaker.
Which him and Cena, now that I'm thinking about it, actually been some of my favorite stuff over the years. Because that legacy, like promo package, is my favorite one of the past like 10 years. And then that cinematic match they did was awesome. And to find out that they put that together over just a couple of days is crazy. Because that was pretty cool. Especially for being put together, just thrown together over a few days. That's wild to me.
Because the kind of workers that John Cena and Bray Wyatt are.
Yeah, that's just, and plus just Cena putting him over so much on there was pretty cool because it seems like Cena knew from like the first time he met him that he was gonna be something, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't agree with the WrestleMania 30 match though. That's another one where I feel like Cena should have lost, you know.
The whole cinematic match talked about it. It's like, you know, John, you should make up for the one mistake that you have in your career. And it was basically not putting me over.
Yeah.
Being an ego-driven maniac, you know, just wanting to do whatever you want. Should we talk about the Firefly Funhouses?
Yeah, I enjoyed most of those. I think that was probably the highlight of the Raws or SmackDowns.
Yeah. Well, we've got Husky the Pig Boy, Rambling Rabbit, Mercy the Buzzers, and Sister Abigail. And the first Firefly Funhouse debuted April 22nd, 2019.
During that time, that was the only reason. That's the only reason I was like going out of my way to try to watch the show was to see those because I wanted to see what was going to happen next. Because those things were cool.
They didn't even talk about the Vince McMahon puppet, which I thought was pretty funny.
I don't think they were going to talk about a Vince McMahon-shaped anything for a long time.
It's fair. They got to protect their investment.
Yeah, I think they're just going to pretend like that man no longer exists and never did.
Delete him from the company.
For sure.
No, I thought the Firefly Funhouses were very well done. They seemed like a kid's show, but then there was this sadistic side where he'd sit there and change his tone, and he'd be like, let me in. And you're like, holy shit, this dude's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
A lot of people were thrown off with the whole gimmick, the whole Mr. Rogers kind of gimmick where he was just very in a stuffy outfit.
Yeah,
I knew instantly, like, bro, look at that. You can't trust that. You know you can't trust
for
that.
Real.
You need to wait. You just watch and see.
I found on YouTube when he was when somebody put a a video package together of the first few Firefly Funhouses from the time he started till he came out as the Fiend. And I showed it to my girlfriend's six-year-old daughter. She thought it was pretty cool. And then when it started getting to the Fiend shit, she was like, what's going on? I'm like, nothing, sweetie, nothing.
Nothing. Everything's fine. Like, bored. This is just regular.
She thought the puppets were cool. She thought him being a host and saying crazy shit was cool. But whenever he'd sit there and say, let me in, and he'd show the Fiend, she'd sit there and be like, what is going on?
Because what, even the first episode of the Firefly Funhouse was like in April, and you didn't see the Fiend until like week three of August. Mm-hmm. You talk about building and building. And that match, like, we can talk about the Fiend's first match. I thought it was perfect. Short, sweet. I would have liked to see it against the Demon Finn Balor, though. Not just regular Finn Balor.
That'd be cool.
I think that entrance was done perfectly for the first time. It was just amazing.
The lantern of his former head, yeah.
I remember tweeting out or making a post saying that everything about that was fucking perfect.
Let's talk about, like, his world titles. Obviously, the first one at Elimination Chamber was epic and amazing. I kind of wish it lasted longer. Maybe it's like a lot of his other reigns.
Did he lose it to Orton at Mania?
Yeah, he lost
it to Orton. Whenever projected shit on the mat?
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that. Yep.
Just a few short... He only had it just a few short weeks. And then he won it as the Fiend. And it was the Universal title. Then he switched it. What'd you guys think of his belt?
I thought it was cool.
Pretty
bad. Probably made a bunch of money.
The Fiend belt or the
blue belt? Them things were expensive.
What was that, Franco?
The Fiend belt or the blue belt?
Oh, the Fiend belt.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was dope.
Those were like $3.99 a piece, man.
Yeah, them things were expensive.
Yep. I'd pay that if it was made out of flesh.
But he had the Universal two different times, right? One he lost to Goldberg, or is that the one and only time he?
I think that's the one and only
time. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Abu Dhabi or what?
No, because he
Saudi Arabia.
He also had it whenever he lost it to Roman Reigns.
Yeah, he had it three times.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Okay. That's true. He did.
I think he had won it from Braun Strowman the week prior, and then lost it the next week to Roman Reigns.
Yeah, that was weird. They had back to back pay per views on back to back weeks.
I remember that, yeah.
PLEs. But.
Well, one of the most heartbreaking thing about the documentary is whenever they started talking about John Huber dying.
Yeah.
And how, because he said in interviews that weren't in this documentary that him and Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, they would always sit there and talk about when they got older. They do the indie circuit together, and they would just, you know, do that for the rest of their lives. But now we lost both of them, and there is nothing like that. Eric Rowan's doing the indie circuit. Sam got to work with him one time, and
we got heat, dog. We got heat.
Well, what happened there that I don't know about?
I was hurt, and he was a dick about it. Because I showed up to I broke my ribs the night before wrestling Joey Janela. And I still showed up to try to do the match, and he was just a super douche. So we got heat.
Mm.
And here we got him actually but waiting. And
it also made me sad too, because like I don't know if you're allowed to say his name on thing no more, but it definitely brought back like the interview with freaking Benoit when they were talking about when Eddie dying and just like the pain and losing his bet, like when they showed Bray trying to talk about when Hubert died, like it brought me back to that too, because you could tell that like hurt him deep, you know. That's crazy.
It almost mirrored like that
it did actual, it was yeah like it, I was like Jesus.
And then when you hear stuff like that, you're almost like, because for a second, I don't know about you guys, but like when I first saw that word break, Bray Wyatt passing, first I was like, this can't be used as a TV thing. And then I was like, second, I was like, man, the first thing that popped in my head was suicide.
Same. And then I felt real bad like the next day.
Yep.
But that's the same thing. The same thing I thought too. And my wife told me.
I feel bad that he could have probably survived if he'd have just wore the damn vest.
Right. That's what his mom was like. He just didn't wear the vest. That's kind of sucked too. Yeah.
Kevin told me, he came to the room, he was like, did you see that Bray Wyatt died? I'm like, what? Uh-uh. He's like, yeah, dude, he just passed away. I'm like, that's fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
Because just a couple days before that, didn't Terry Funk pass away?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, right, yeah, I was like, well, it was like, I think it was like the same, it was like the day before, like the,
yeah,
like, Terry Funk was at night and Bray was in the morning or something like that. It was real close because they did the tribute thing. They had one for both of them on that, the Raw or whatever the next day.
Let's
it was real close.
Talk about the way they presented his death in the documentary. It was almost unsettling to watch. Like, I felt like I shouldn't be watching it, especially when JoJo was explaining the event of the day. Yeah. And, like, let's say he wore the vest. It almost sounded like, right before they were talking about his death, it almost sounded like his heart was too weak to where he was probably going to have to retire anyway, right?
Yeah, it didn't seem like, it didn't seem like it was very good, because they said something about that. He said that he was telling somebody he's going to have to get a pacemaker and stuff. So yeah. So, his career is probably over, but, like, he was still, could still get it done stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be some way involved with the company, sure. When I heard that, I was like, man, pacemaker, that almost made me sad all over again, because I'm like, bittersweet. Yeah, he would have survived, but we never would have seen him in the ring again.
No way.
I was just shocked at how graphic they went into his final day.
They did, yeah.
And
that was a brutal part. And his sister talking about how she was telling her baby was going to be okay, even though she knew it wasn't. And then homie talking about when they kept the doctor come, because everybody knows what it means when you go to the hospital and they put you in that little side room. Everybody knows what that means. So that's just brutal.
And then it all started with COVID, right?
Yeah.
That's what they said that John Huber died from, was COVID complications.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, Bray was seeming like, it looked like he was in the best shape of his life, too.
Yep.
And for that to happen then, like, that's got to be brutal. Like, I wonder what he's thinking, you know? Like, he's like, shit, I've fucking been working my butt off to get in better shape, and then I got sick, and now my stuff's over. Like, that's got to be brutal.
So we kind of talked about the Orton match at WrestleMania 37. Fast forward a year later in Dallas, he wasn't even at WrestleMania 38 because of the release. We were all shocked when we heard about the death. What was going through you guys' mind when you saw that Bray Wyatt was released?
I think me and Andy were in Houston for a show.
Yeah.
I think we had woken up. I was like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? How do you release your biggest star like that? That had to be a joke.
You can't know with this company, man. They make choices that are just the most bizarre.
It's crazy because he got released.
I think it was July.
July 2021. Yeah. The first Fiend appearance wasn't until, April or August 2019? Mm-hmm. We had the Fiend for 2 years, practically only. And the mark that the Fiend left on everybody.
The hottest star they had. The most interesting character. I don't understand.
Because when he came back, it wasn't as the Fiend, and we got no... I think it was just as Bray Wyatt whenever he faced LA Knight.
Yeah, just Bray Wyatt for now at the time. Jay, Sam, what did you guys think of the release? Me personally, before you guys answer, I thought it was like, oh, Bray Wyatt was released, but it's because they're only bringing the Fiend back. I thought it was something to do like that. I didn't believe it.
At the time, like, I didn't understand, but now I watched the documentary. I mean, it seemed like he needed the break. You know, because it seemed like he was getting in too deep and stuff. So it seemed like he needed the breaks. And I'm sure for them to do that, there had to have been something that just no one's talked about that happened. Either he had to say the wrong thing or ask for them to release him or piss off the wrong person or do something crazy or say something crazy, or they wouldn't have got rid of him for budget cuts or whatever bullcrap they said. Because he was the creative, so that's what I'm saying. So he either made the wrong, he made Vince mad or something, or he was just getting, or he was doing something that was out of control. Like, who knows? And maybe it might have had something to do with the divorce and all that stuff, or who knows? Like, they didn't want the PR. There's no telling. Like, there was obviously something happened for them to do something so drastic as to release Bray Wyatt. Something obviously happened that we don't know about.
That's because
they definitely wouldn't have done that for no reason.
Later that year, they released the Fiend Christmas Funko Pop as well. 6 months later.
That's what's crazy. That's what's crazy is, like, say he was going through something personal. Say he was one of those guys who, you know what, I'm just into method acting and I'm going to get so deep in my character that I can't come back from. Like, well, look at what Brock Lesnar is going through right now, and he is still technically on the roster. Like, there's no way they couldn't have just set him aside and put him on, like, a sabbatical or something. That kind of, that also, like, looking at the work aspect of it, company standpoint, like, man, that's insane. Also feel like, you know, hey, maybe they shouldn't be, technically they're still independent contractors, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there should be some kind of, like, union or something. That's a whole nother conversation.
Well, they've been trying that for years, man, since Jesse Ventura.
So the ending of the documentary was by all means heartbreaking. We had a hard time talking about it. JoJo's conversation was completely, like I said, I felt like I shouldn't even been watching that.
Yeah, it was brutal.
And
even his ex-wife, I mean, you could tell how much that dude meant to people, and that's just hard to watch. You know,
it wasn't just about, like, the wives, it was the kid too.
Yeah, like, just to see how much that dude meant to somebody, like, it's hard. And as, like, a man and a father and a husband and everything, it's just hard. Like, it's hard to see stuff like that, because then you start wondering if it, like, how people are going to act if you're gone, if you're living a good enough life or that stuff. So it's rough all over the place, but especially as a wrestler, a father, a husband, like, all that stuff, it cut deep.
Well, his dad said it best. He was crying.
And the same age. And, like, because he's only, like, a year older than me, too. So, yeah, it cut me deep. And, yeah, when his dad was crying, I was definitely crying.
He was like, he was loved by millions.
Yeah. That's wild.
It didn't help the fact that I watched The Iron Claw, like, the day before, too. And I just got done watching Kevin Von Erich sit there and say, I'm not a brother anymore. And I'm like, oh, Bo Dallas.
Yeah. Brutal.
The only positives that I thought that came out of it was that they started, Bo and Bray started together, tag teaming together, and then they kind of ended it together.
Yeah.
Before he passed away. Like, sure, they wanted a WrestleMania match, but they at least were able to end their career kind of together.
That is a huge positive, actually, to think about, take away from everything.
Well, just the way the documentary says that him and his brother hanging out was, like, the biggest thing that Bray wanted to do at that point in time was to be with his brother again.
Yeah. So brutal.
Before we get out of here and talk about maybe a favorite segment or scene of the documentary, which might be a little hard, going into his last WrestleMania, his very last promo with Bobby Lashley, where do you guys think that might have gone? Do you think it would have been just another Bray Wyatt lost at Mania and maybe another story that could have just been thrown under the rug, or do you think we would have seen something a little bit bigger?
I feel like with him just coming back, I feel like they probably had something big planned, and especially because he came back while Triple H was more in charge. So I imagine that they probably had big plans, if I had to guess. I don't think it would have been just another loss. I think it would have been something big, I feel like.
I think Lashley was on, like, a losing streak as well around that time.
Yeah.
I look at it this way. Lashley's not a big enough talent to go over Bray Wyatt.
I think it's kind of a fair fight between the two. Sure, Lashley wasn't the biggest at that point, but he's had a legacy. He's had a long career, and
I automatically kind of felt bad vibes from it to begin with, because they had the Lashley and Lesnar match and the winner was going to face Bray Wyatt at Mania. Like, we were so close to a Lesnar Wyatt match, but then, you know, when that's a stipulation, like, the winner faces Bray Wyatt, I'm like, sounds too Vince McMahon like. I don't know.
I feel like a Bray Wyatt and Brock Lesnar match would have been pretty cool.
I think
Brock selling for Bray would have been sweet.
Supposedly was supposed to happen at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. Bray Wyatt bum knee. That's why you got Dean Ambrose and Lesnar. And then supposedly, from what I read last year, it was supposed to happen at WrestleMania Hollywood. But I heard Lesnar was being difficult to work with and didn't want to put Bray over. So I don't. Again, those are just rumors. Right.
Yeah.
So, But that sounds like something Triple H would do. Like, okay, Lesnar, you want to be difficult? Here's Omos.
Mm-hmm. You can work the Nigerian giant.
You guys have a favorite scene or mention? I know it's kind of hard because of the documentary being a little difficult to watch. And I'll probably go off and saying my favorite would probably be the ending where you do get to see Bo Dallas say that there is something at the end of the tunnel, and maybe he can carry on something that Bray Wyatt would like to see.
So. It did feel like a tie-in to the actual story in wrestling. And that's why you were talking about it at the very beginning of this podcast, where it wasn't too soon to release this. I felt like it was a good time. I would have preferred it a little sooner just to show us that he's not gone. Like, his lineage, his legacy is not gone and is not forgotten. I was going to say that's my favorite scene, too, was just that little glimmer of hope that the Fiend and Bray Wyatt's story is still there waiting for us.
I think I just enjoyed any time that Bo saw, like, his all of his stuff and everything.
Yeah.
I want to sit there and say that my favorite thing about the entire documentary is, like, we've talked about this the entire time, is just the amount of footage they had of him being interviewed. That it was like he was able to tell this entire story. He was basically able to narrate his own biography.
Yeah.
That was cool. I don't know if I have a favorite scene, but I think my favorite thing throughout the documentary was how, like, homie never hardly, like, he didn't say my brother was this, or like he kept saying is, and like kept referring to him as, like, in the present tense, which I thought was like a sweet little thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And another thing we didn't really talk about is how he left his football playing days to go join his brother and go do all that stuff. So that was a pretty big gamble, but at the end of the day, it paid off.
Paid off brilliantly.
Yeah. So, and I think this is going to be like a character that people are just going to continue to talk about. It'll be one of those that the more years go on, he's just going to become bigger and bigger. Probably Hall of Fame induction ceremony next year. A lot of people wanted it this year, especially with his dad going in. Were you guys kind of shocked, or do you get the fact why they're waiting probably a year or two?
Well, it's obvious that he's going to go in eventually. So I don't know if there's a rush or if there's a perfect time or whatever. But I mean, it's obviously going to happen, which I think is all that really matters. Because I'm sure they've had these Hall of Fame things put together for years in advance or whatever. I'm sure they don't just throw this stuff together every year or whatever.
Drew Carey,
maybe maybe the celebrity or the Warrior Award or whatever may be like a not as locked in, but I guarantee they probably have the Hall of Fame locked in for probably 10 years in advance. I mean, or at least have an idea or whatever. So
they didn't have that this year, though, did they? The Warrior Award.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, I didn't even notice, did they?
For all the help she done with Hawaii wrestling.
But I'm definitely, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll definitely be in there eventually. But I wasn't upset that it didn't happen, because, like I said, I know it's going to happen eventually. So I'm sure his family wants, like, maybe they want to let the build on his legacy and stuff before then, you know, so they can be able to tell more of a story by then so then they can prove that he had an impact after he was gone still, you know, and that'll make the whole Hall of Fame thing even better.
Maybe next year or the year after.
Yeah, if he can bring back Uncle Howdy or do whatever they're going to do and, like, continue his thing and build on it, and then they can be like, see, it's been years since he's been gone and he's still here, you know.
Before star rating, if they do bring back Uncle Howdy, how do you think they guys should he just be a dominating force, or kind of how do you book that? That kind of feels like you're being booked into a corner, though.
I agree.
Somebody who gets paid a whole lot more money, a whole lot smarter than me is going to cover that, because I have no idea.
Well, he can first have a stable, big old group, which I think they hinted at that with Sean Spears being a part of it.
Oh.
I can see that. You just make him be an intimidating force, pretty much, because we know who it is. Oh, Dallas. We we know what he was like before. It's not like he can be unstoppable.
That's what I was saying. So do you bring back Bo Dallas first and like something turns him into that? Like maybe he comes back and he's saying he's not, like maybe he tries, maybe he does some story where he's trying to not do that or whatever, and then like they film stuff where he slowly starts turning into that type thing, or does he come out as unhappy?
When Bray came back recently and he got to talk to the fans, like as him for once, Wyndham, I feel like Taylor would do that. Go out there and announce the little heart to heart. And then I guess maybe Uncle Howdy has some sort of promo on the screen, and there he is in the ring.
That'd be sick. I'm going to pop if that's what happens.
I'm calling it now. Uncle Howdy wins the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
24/7 title.
No, that was all. I had to end on some kind of a funny note. Five-star rating, 1 out of 5. One being absolute red hell in a cell. 5 being absolute fantastic. Pitch black. Franco, start us off. What was your star rating for this documentary being?
I'll give this legacy promo, which is a perfect 5.
Yeah, perfect
good
5.
Call. Good call.
It kind of sounds like it's a 5 all around. It's. I feel like we need a part 2.
I agree.
I don't know. I guess a 5 because I really enjoyed it. Like, not like I was happy about it, but like it really meant a lot to see it. So it's a 5.
Sam?
Yeah, a 5 for me too. Like I enjoyed it. I've seen it a couple times, and I'd go back and watch it again. Like I really enjoyed it. It kept me, because it doesn't seem like it's 2 hours long either.
Mm-mm.
So it definitely could have went longer, and I wouldn't have been mad about it.
I'll give this the King Kong Bundy 5. 5 times over, or the Booker T 5. But yeah, 5 for me. Jay?
I'll give it a 5 as well. We've all talked about how there are certain things missing, like they could do a part 2 with it, but for what they gave us, it was well worth it. It got the point of the man's life across.
Especially for a character that hadn't, 2012 to really now. You didn't get a full 10 years either with the ins and outs. So it's definitely one of those characters that we always wanted more of. And at the end of the day, it seems like he was a pretty cool dude.
He was featured in NXT as Husky Harris in 2010.
Oof. So.
Bray Wyatt, though.
But as Bray Wyatt, he was around 2000. Yeah. Well, no, yeah, it was his debut for NXT developmental debut was July 11th, 2012.
Other than that, guys, that's it. This was our very first time reviewing a documentary. That being a sad as shit one, but it was still a good conversation. I was glad everybody was able to hop on with me. Franco, do you have anything before we head out? Any future projects or announcements?
No, I have like the woos I do. One coming out Saturday. What's Stud Stash? Have some shows this weekend. TWA tomorrow in San Antonio. Odessa debut Saturday for Old School Wrestling, and then Sunday in Axtell for HOT. So, yeah, catch me there.
Nice. Andy?
I upload here and there on the channel. We have fun here. It's on the screen. Spelling is weird. But occasionally, catch me there.
All right. Sam, you have anything you want to announce or anything you're doing here this weekend or soon?
Well, this weekend, tomorrow I'll be in Amarillo. And then Saturday I'll be at a pop culture, PTX Con in Paris, Texas. And then 420, got a big show in Tulsa. It's going to be pretty cool. And then next Sunday, I'll be back at Game Changer Wrestling in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So that'd be cool.
Dang.
It's in the shopping center that they filmed Better Call Saul and stuff in. So it's pretty cool. Don't know who I'm wrestling yet, but I'll be there. Oh, yeah,
get it. You also have the gimmick table.
You need merch. You need merch, stickers, puzzles, all kinds. I can make whatever you want. Get at you, boy.
Jay, anything you're doing this weekend?
Yeah, we're reviewing Aquaman 2. That's about it. That's what I have planned for this weekend. Aquaman 2.
Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom.
We're going to discuss the Zack Snyder universe.
Yep. The top five Zack Snyder DC films. Sunday, 6 p.m., Aquaman 2 and the Lost Kingdom. We're going to really see. Is it as bad as people say it is? How many shits do people really give about this universe now that it's really over? So we're going to talk about it this Sunday. Friday, May the 3rd, come check us out at Rodeo Cinema Live. Live screening of The Night of the Living Dead, followed up by a live podcast panel with yours truly and everybody else involved. So come check us out. Other than that, guys, if that's going to do it, should be a fun week. Everybody have a fun weekend. Safe travels. And join us Sunday for a brand new episode of the Cinnamon Movie Podcast.